you have a packet of numbers here that you've crunched with graphs. Tell me why you have the background to be able to do something like this. And then tell me why you're looking at South Dakota's DUI laws and all of the things associated with it when you're from New York.
Yeah, Susan and I, my wife Susan and I, are both professional statisticians. Most of the work we do is for electric utilities. We have been looking at the South Dakota's DUI, crash, fatality, injury rates for the simple reason that our daughter was killed on July 8th, 2013 in a particularly gruesome DUI killing. Also killed that day was Dr. Robert Klum. Both Megan and Rob were full-time employees with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Rob was an adjunct professor at SDSU. They were standing in a parking lot after a 13-hour workday. They were next to trailered boats. They were reviewing the day's progress and the type of equipment. There was another fisheries biologist standing next to them when a drunk driver came into the parking lot at highway speed. The one other individual, Dan James, was spared. Megan and Rob were gruesomely killed when they were hit at highway speed. As a consequence, we decided to come to South, well, we had to come to South Dakota to retrieve Megan's belongings, but we also began to look at DUI and DUI within South Dakota in particular.
But what you're finding is not necessarily good for DUIs in South Dakota.
No, it's not. South Dakota and a lot of the states in the northern Great Plains, Wyoming, Montana, you know, have some of the worst DUI rates in the United States. South Dakota pretty consistently is in the bottom decile, you know, amongst the worst 10 of the 50 states. And as a consequence, you know, we wanted to understand why is there a difference between New York, where we live, and South Dakota? Why is there so much higher incidence? The difference is about three times as many deaths per capita in South Dakota as there is in New York State. You had asked about South Dakota's numbers. Well, let's put it this way. You know, the 1970s were the bad old days, and the blood alcohol content at the time was 0.15. That was lowered to 0.10. And death rate was essentially cut in half between the 70s and the 90s. Kind of flat lines during the 90s with approximately 90 to 100 deaths per year. And as we entered the 2000s, the federal government began to provide incentives for states to lower blood alcohol content from 0.10 to 0.08. At the same time, the federal government also provided grant money for additional enforcement actions by all states, not just South Dakota. So what happened was, starting in about 2002 timeframe, there were about 90 deaths roughly per year, 2001, 2002. South Dakota cut that by a third to one half by 2007. Impressive gains were made. What was particularly disturbing to us is starting about 2007, whether you're looking at crashes, injuries, or deaths, all these measures flatlined in 2007, and they've been flat ever since. So the past 6 to 7 years, there have been absolutely no measurable improvements in crashes, injuries, or deaths within South Dakota. So that's why we became active, trying to get the state to consider more vigorous enforcement and also changing some of their laws.
You mentioned that your statistical career isn't based in DUI research, but it does appear that it's sort of become your life's work.
Well, you know, I turned 60 in a couple of months. You know, the business, by on its own accord, kind of winds down mercifully at this point in life. you know, we feel it's the least we can do. We have these specialized skills and we can present the data. And as you've looked at the trend charts are not pretty. I think anybody that's educated that looks at those trend charts would look at it and ask the governor, why does this condition exist and what are we doing about it?
Your visits to South Dakota should have been to visit your daughter in grad school to see what she's doing. And now you're coming back to lobby for legislation and to sit in a trial. That has to be a stark difference from what you anticipated your experience in South Dakota would be.
Yeah, as Megan was an outdoor girl. She loved the outdoors, had been in Wyoming a couple of years, came to Pierre in March of 2013 to start her position there. You know, left the mountains and was kind of grumbling about the high plains and stuff, but it really grew upon her. She had a ticket to come and visit us on July 13th. She was killed on the 8th, you know, the Saturday, her ashes came on the 11th instead of her coming home on a plane on the 13th. You know, we can't even begin to tell you what that feels like. South Dakota was the last state in the Union that I had never been to. My brother is a wildlife refuge manager in Alaska that mentored Megan. He's married to a woman from White Lake, so there is a family connection. She grew up on a farm there. Part of the reason I hadn't been to South Dakota because my brother and my daughter, we were always chatting with about getting together and going to the Black Hills and, you know, doing some exploration. So it was one of those things that was kind of pushed off. Well, Megan was here and we had plans for a backpacking trip in the Black Hills in August. Coming to South Dakota every time is filled with dread and grief for us. That first trip was particularly difficult. We had to pack up every single item that she owned. We had to handle every scrap of paper and load it into the car. We had gotten her a new car. She paid a good portion of it in January, drove to Wyoming, then came here. And after she got here, she put on like about 5 or 6,000 miles tooling around the state. She did make one trip to Wyoming, but almost all that was exploring the state. I can't even begin to tell you how dusty the car was from driving on these gravel roads in the Black Hills and in the national grasslands as she just wanted to explore. You know, she was working with the scientists on the Missouri River and had wonderful mentors and, you know, was just gushing with enthusiasm about her work. You know, we couldn't wait for her to come home. We come back now. And this is a circumstance, you know, the coming back for the trial, you know, we can't even begin to tell you what it's like to sit through a trial. Susan, Tamara, and I, Tamara the sister, we excused ourselves from the most graphic portions of the testimony. There was a lot of photographic evidence, and these are things that people really never would want to see. My brothers sat through the entire trial. You know, we were sitting in on the trial and a young woman came in with a black t-shirt on that said hit and run exclamation point. She comes in with a big grin on her face, sits down with Fisher's supporters. I turn my head and there's a row of people looking at me laughing. We asked that she be removed from the courtroom and she was. You know, those are some of the bad things. Some of the good things are there were people out demonstrating against alcohol and methamphetamine, saying this is ruining our people, it's killing our children, it's time to stop. They were out there for at least a couple of hours. I had strangers come up to me on the street in Lake Andes and shake my hand and express condolences. I had people hug me. Susan and Tamara had strangers hug them. You know, there's a lot of good people that really care, but, you know, it can assuage the pain, but you know, it doesn't go away in any way, shape, or form.
From an overall, a couple of things that you've noticed that you think could change the number of deaths we have on the road because of DUIs in South Dakota, what can South Dakota do?
Well, the National Transportation Safety Board on May 13th of 2013 issued a report, Reaching Zero, Actions to Reduce Alcohol-Impaired Driving. The NTSB issued this report, and part of the report was to further lower the blood alcohol content from 0.08 to 0.05 or lower, and then quite a number of other recommendations. NTSB advocates what's called high visibility enforcement as well. This is a program of regular saturation patrols and also sobriety checkpoints. You want to make sure that people that are considering impaired driving notice that law enforcement is out there and that there's a high likelihood of being caught. NTSB also recommends vehicle impoundment and also license suspension. These are administrative procedures that are imposed upon arrest. Vehicle impoundment, when I parked here at the University of Sioux Falls parking lot, it says if you park here and you don't have a permit, your car is going to get towed. Well, you know, it's the same sort of deal. You know, if you're driving drunk, your car is towed. Might be held 3 days, might be held a week. If you're a repeat offender, maybe a month. It costs you money to get it back, and you have to pay the towing company. NTSB also recommends license suspension. Same deal. Your license gets immediately pulled upon arrest, and it's held for 3 days or a week or maybe a month, and then you pay money to get it back. That's before any sentencing. So it's an immediate sanction. We also suggested asset forfeiture. Ron Fisher, the person accused of killing our daughter, was driving a communally owned vehicle, uninsured, unregistered, and he had no driver's license. You know, in certain parts of the state, that's routine. We suggest asset forfeiture and a clear and simple path to seize the vehicles of people that are convicted of drunk driving. Take the things to the crusher, or put them up for auction and do it effectively and cheaply. We also suggested that there be limitations on plea bargains. Over a third of the arrests in South Dakota do not result in conviction. That's not because police are doing a bad job. That's because there are plea bargains to things like from DUI to reckless driving, or they have a very good lawyer and they're able to make some sort of argument and convince the judge that there was an error in testing or something like this. We don't believe plea bargains benefit anybody. Part of coming to South Dakota is to convey the message to South Dakotans that this is entirely preventable and entirely needless. You know, South Dakota last year killed 42 people. The year before it was 53. You know, probably 650, 700 injuries, debilitating injuries requiring hospitalization every year. There's a whole lot of suffering just in this state. And, you know, I think the people of South Dakota should demand of the governor and their legislators to do something about this. Stop the killing, stop the suffering. It's entirely preventable.
Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. We appreciate the opportunity.